It took Israel around 3 hours to destroy nearly all of Egypt's air force in a preemptive strike on June 5th of 1967, when they knew Arab countries were planning to attack Israel. It took Israel 6 days to win that war against three Arab armies that were, much like the Palestinians, intent on annihilating Israel. Fast forward, what is it? It's 57 years, and but not too fast. Slow down so you can see the progression of how Israel has changed its perspective on fighting wars since then. You'll notice that Israel keeps taking steps to attempt to appease those who say very clearly they want nothing other than to kill all the Jews in the Middle East, at the very least. And those steps have always resulted in more and more deaths. And eventually, if you go down that route, you get to 6 months ago today, October 7th, 2023, when Israel knew, first of all, as it always knows, that Hamas is intent on killing Jews whenever and wherever it can. Also knew that something big was planned. Also had some indication that something was going on the night before. Now, I very much am opposed to any of those conspiracy theories saying Israel let this happen. What Israel did is not act because it is not acting as a matter of policy, because its matter of policy is to appease its enemies and to appease its critics and so-called allies in the West by just not acting until it seems like there is no choice, and then acting as apologetically as possible. 6 months into this war, it is very difficult, I think, to argue that Israel has not lost this war, even though militarily this should be a much easier war to win than the Six-Day War. Welcome to the Daily Objective. It is April 7th, 6 months exactly since the October 7th attack. Daniel, your first thoughts on this day?
So there is one thing you left out when you mentioned about how quickly the Six-Day War went on, and it's something we mention whenever we talk about October 7th and what Israel's response should have been. We always talk about Israel should have invaded Gaza on October 7th, at latest on October 8th. And I always found this point, I wasn't so much sure about it, if something like that was possible. But when I researched Six-Day War a bit more, I learned that, yeah, pretty much almost all of Gaza, with the exception of Gaza City, was completely occupied on the day of when the war started. And then on the second day, the rest of Gaza was occupied. And as you said, in just the 6 days, all of Sinai, which is twice or three times as big as all of Israel, was occupied. So Israel is capable, or Israel was capable of this. And if Israel was actually fully intended in finishing this war, I think Israel could have done this again. And it's really sad to see where we got. So I have a And if I look a bit too depressed about everything, we just had the elections in Slovakia, which ended really badly. So I might be a bit more pessimistic than I am usually.
Yeah, there are many reasons to be pessimistic. But by the way, I don't think Israel should have invaded Gaza on October 8th. I don't think they were ready militarily. I don't think they had the. But I also don't think that was the first thing that to be done. The first thing to be done is an aerial bombardment that would devastate Gaza so much that when Israel eventually did invade, it would be the soldiers would have much less to do. And they would be much less at risk. Remember, around 260 soldiers, I believe, have been killed so far in this operation. Four more deaths were announced today. These are, for the vast in the vast majority of cases, not necessary deaths. These are not deaths in a war that couldn't have been avoided. They could have been avoided, but the cost of avoiding them politically is to the Israeli leadership This is clear from their policy, if not from their words. That's a higher price than the lives of these soldiers. And there's this discussion now in Israel over recruiting ultra-Orthodox Jews who are typically exempt from the military. And one of the arguments by, I believe it was the defense minister in Israel, was we need more soldiers, which is absolutely horrendous if you think of what that means. It means we need more soldiers as fodder. We need more soldiers to die so that we can show to the world, look, we're doing everything to avoid civilian casualties on the enemy's side, even at the cost of our citizens. We've said in the past, this is a war. There's nothing clearer in the world in current events and politics, nothing easier to judge. And it's easy to judge, not because Israel is perfect. It's not. It's because the Palestinians are pure evil. And in Israel's, one of Israel's very clear imperfections is, if you want to divide the two sides in the easiest way, you'd say one is on the side of death and the other is on the side of life. But Israel is not enough on the side of life when it comes to its own people, these policies prove that in the deaths of the soldiers, in the fact that rockets are still being fired, and the fact that terrorist attacks are still happening pretty much daily, or attempts at terrorist attacks are daily from the West Bank, and Israel is not winning the war.
So, another point I had, again, comparing to the 6 Day War and this 6 Month War we have so far, is if you check and see how basically the 6 Day War happened, again, it wasn't Israel waiting to get attacked. Just quickly, the way it went down. So there was the Suez Crisis where Egypt tried to close the Straits of the Straits of Tehran, which is basically the lower part of Israel where Israel has access to the Red Sea. That's the Red Sea, right? So basically, Egypt tried to do that earlier. Israel invaded, made sure that didn't happen, and then the UN had a peacekeeping force on the border of Egypt and Israel. What happened is in May 67, the Egyptian president closed the straits again, mobilized the army, and dismissed all the UN peacekeeping forces. Israel saw this as a clear, basically, attack on Israel, which it was, and only a couple of weeks after, preemptively attacked, didn't wait, preemptively attacked, surprised Egypt, completely destroyed the air force of Egypt, and invaded right after, and was able to completely destroy the military capabilities not only of Israel, but sorry, not only of Egypt and Gaza, which Egypt controlled, but also of of Jordan in the West Bank and Syria in the Golan Heights, and completely occupied everything. And again, when you check the difference, I mean, come on, we are 6 months in the war, and Israel is still not occupying all of Gaza. The small Gaza that it was able to occupy in just 2 days. And even when the people on, let's say, the other side, say, complain about the casualties. Well, the fatalities on the Arab side during this war was only 20,000. Well, we don't really know what it is right now, but at least from the IDF, it's about 15,000 confirmed Hamas militants that died. Even if you care about life, quick, decisive war that would completely destroy all of Hamas in, let's say, a couple of weeks with all the bombings and then the ground operation would be much better for everyone. This is like, I'm trying to connect. At the end of the day, it really is altruism. This sort of like, we have to care about the other side, but altruism is so incredibly deadly, but it's like deadly in such a secret way, like you don't even see it. But once you check the numbers, when you check what is actually happening, how many people are actually dying, and what is the result of all of it, you see that altruism, I mean, mainly is destructive to the Israeli side, which is what I actually care about. But yeah, it's not like Palestinians are doing any better by these weak and indecisive actions of Israel. If Israel was decisive, like America in the Second World War, or like in Israel in the Six-Day War, it would be obviously much better for Israel, but even for the Palestinians, it would be much better. And when we like check what happened in the past, there's this one quote that like history repeats itself. And I heard that there's a much better line: history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And the problem is that it rhymes too much. And again, I'm depressive from my own country because I see the similarities coming back from what we had. And yeah, to see Israel again not learning from these lessons, because they already know what should be done, or they should know what should be done. They already experienced this. And the fact that they are not is, yeah, bringing me down. And it's bringing down all of Israel, because even the Israeli people don't really have in them anymore what had to be done or what needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too depressing, but I also want to be connected to reality. I think years from now, people will look at the current time. I mean, months after this war started, as a turning point for the worse and by a lot for Israel, unfortunately. Yeah, you mentioned caring about life. Caring about life, human life, involves judging people morally, and then you don't treat all of life equally. The life of somebody, a scientist discovering a cure for cancer is not the same as the life of a terrorist. One is to be celebrated, the other is to be ended. In Israel, again, in the way it operates in Gaza, is operating in a way that does not look to its own people like it wants to win the war, which is why there is there are now mass demonstrations. Oddly enough, from the wrong side of what I think people should be protesting against, and not protesting by blocking the roads, but opposing, let's say, but also to the enemy. This emboldens them so much that they are now, even in this, we talked about these negotiations, where, of course, I think everybody on this channel agrees that it is wrong to negotiate with terrorists, and that no negotiations over hostages, over a ceasefire, none of that should happen at all. You do not negotiate with Hamas, you eliminate Hamas. But Israel is negotiating, and you can see even in the negotiation the difference between the negotiations a few months ago, when there was a temporary ceasefire and some terrorists were released and some of the hostages were released by Hamas, to the negotiations today, where Hamas is demanding a lot more. Israel is offering a lot more. The West is putting pressure on Israel to capitulate to Hamas in the negotiations, including Biden. The president of the United States has never been. I've said early in this war that I've never heard such pro-Israel rhetoric from a U.S. president. I think the words Biden said at the beginning of the war surprised me. And I've never seen any US president as anti-Israel as they are now. Biden was pro-Israel when Israel was attacked and didn't respond. Once Israel responded and tried to defend itself and try to prevent Hamas from doing what they promised, which is to repeat October 7th again and again until Israel is annihilated. Once Israel did a little bit, and again, it's not doing nearly enough to actually prevent that, suddenly Biden is very much in every way imaginable, as we talked about, as Morgan and James talked about yesterday, siding with Hamas. And to James's credit, as he mentioned yesterday, he saw this, he saw Biden's rhetoric from day one. Let me quickly thank Norbert for becoming a YouTube member. Thank you, Bonnie, for the super chat. Thank you, Iron Meerkat. Oh, wow. I first saw the super chat and then I saw the question. I'm going to read it. I'm gonna go to you first, Daniel, and I'm gonna think about it. Wow, can get me in trouble, but all right. Iron Meerkat says, "Would you consider voting for Ben Gvir because of this emergency?" P.S. I think Gaza must be destroyed. I completely agree with the statement. Daniel will answer the question and then I will attempt to answer it.
So, I've been trying to research Ben-Gvir a little bit. Would I consider, so let's say if I was an Israeli citizen, and this was during the war, or let's say even maybe at the start of the war, and there was an option to vote for Ben-Gvir. So again, I don't know enough about him. Some of his rhetoric like seemed nice, but again, there is this sort of like real like sort, I don't know what to even call it. This like yeah, Jewish like nationalism, Jewish like ethno-nationalism, even anti-Arabism to the point of like anti-Israeli Arabism. I don't know enough to like make a judgment on either side. I mean, I'm leaning towards no. I think even in the because it's not just the invasion, it's also the occupation and sort of the long-term aspects of occupation. And maybe someone like him would be good in the war itself, but again, the occupation part needs to be done right. And I'm not sure if someone like that can do the occupation right. I mean, again, I'm not sure. I know neither is Netanyahu. Even if Gaza gets completely occupied, I don't think Netanyahu is either going to do co occupation the exactly right. But maybe I gave Razi enough time to think of an answer.
This reminds me of a question we got actually a couple of times a few weeks ago after the terrorist attack in Russia when videos came out of Russia torturing the terrorists. And the question was Russia right to do this? And the answer was Russia should not exist. It is not right in its existence. Now, if you take just the attack out of context and say, let's say this happened in a legitimate country, would that be a legitimate way to treat the people who did that? My answer is absolutely yes. Now, with Ben-Gvir, when it comes to his rhetoric about what should be done in Gaza, when it comes to rhetoric about what should be done, I would vote for Netanyahu. His rhetoric is fantastic. Ben-Gvir, unfortunately, if he was the leader of Israel, Israel would be, if not immediately, it would be a massive leap towards theocracy. So I would vote for somebody with bad ideas about everything, who says I'm gonna. Oh, let me take a step back before that. If and when elections happen, this war by that time will probably be over, or more or less over. And what I would vote for is somebody who has bad ideas about everything, but says I'm gonna reopen this. We didn't finish the job. I'm gonna restart the war in Gaza. Gonna go to the West Bank because the West Bank. A big attack is coming at some point, and small attacks are a good enough reason to go to war, and they're happening every day. So I would want somebody with that rhetoric. Remember, Ben-Gvir is in the government that is doing what is being done now. So that's a I think a long-winded way of saying no, but I would vote for somebody who I would normally not vote for. I'd probably, Jonathan can disagree with me next time he's on the reality show. I'd probably vote for Feiglin reluctantly because I think he would do the right thing on this and on some other things. And again, I would be reluctant in my vote.
So one point I wanted to make, and I noticed that so again, as I mentioned, we had an election yesterday. I was a chairman of a election, what you call it, like a
Like a voting station?
and so I got to talk to a lot of people there, and I also talked to the wow, I'm struggling with the mayor of our like village. And so he was talking about the sort of the country and who should be the leader. And one thing I noticed is, so we have like a government that's really destroying like the basically destroying the law itself, like the sort of lawfulness of the country. And what he complained is about that if the opposition won, he wouldn't get money for the village. And I see this as sort of like such a disconnected way of like viewing the world, that everything else should go to hell, but as long as I can keep this one thing. In a similar way, I see, the people calling for ceasefire. People are dying. Everything else go to hell. Let's ignore the fact that Hamas attacked Israel. Let's ignore the fact that, yeah, the Palestinian people themselves celebrated these deaths, that they participated in the rapes and killings and kidnapping of hostages. Let's ignore all that just because the people are dying. And whenever I hear that, I'm completely lost, because what do you even say? What do you even say to these people? Like, for them, the world be damned. Just if I keep this one thing for no reason at all, just because this is how I feel, just because this is my emotions. And for the from now on, I really wanna look into like what do you do when people have these beliefs, when they ignore reality itself, when they ignore everything else, but they just have emotional tie to like one thing. And in this part, it's like ceasefire.
Yeah, and I mean it all proves, unfortunately proves us right in our approach of saying, we're working at the Ayn Rand Center UK for cultural change, which is it's a very, very long game. And in current politics, there is nothing better. But by the way, I think the UK is a great example for the right politics not being able to move a country in the right direction, because this country was on the brink of disaster with something very close to socialism. I don't like to call every left-wing policy socialism, because socialism is a bit worse than that, but we had something close enough. And then Margaret Thatcher came into power, fixed this country completely. And look at the political sentiments in this country now. It can't start from politics. Politics has to be the end of the line. It has to be how people deal with reality, how people deal with other people, how people deal with their own life, first of all. And yeah, unfortunately, this is also why I'm saying, I'd vote for somebody who I think is very bad if it came to that. To go back to Iron Meerkat's question, by the way, Iron Meerkat says that he volunteered for Fagelin in his pre-objectivist days. I know somebody else who volunteered for Fagelin in his pre-objectivist days. I don't know. I don't think it's Iron, because that guy has a different name on YouTube. So it's pretty sure it's not you, unless the person I'm thinking about has two YouTube names. But yeah, it will be interesting and uncomfortable to see what happens in the coming months, because Israel's war effort, unfortunately, is going in a worse direction, no matter where it goes. If it goes towards complete surrender, which is what, despite what Netanyahu will tell you, that is what it means if Israel doesn't go on a ground operation in Rafah. They today left Khan Yunis, right, and said, but they're close enough that they can go back at any point. And this is also a point that we've been talking about in the channel, in terms of what an occupation should look like. An occupation should not look like that. Like, oh, we can come back at any point. No, we need to be seen. Israel needs to be seen by the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people need to know that they're living under an occupation, which they haven't been, even in the parts where technically, legally, if you will, it is an occupation, like in the West Bank. It's not a real occupation. And that is something that needs to happen at the end of a military operation that completely destroys their military capabilities and destroys the will of the people to fight. And there was another, oh yeah, the other point is, of course, if a Rafah operation does happen, I am not optimistic that it will end well for Israel, because Israel, as we've said on this channel for since October 7th, Israel doesn't go by what is right. It goes by what they think they can get their allies to not be too upset with them over. And if a Rafah operation happens, Israel's allies have already expressed that they are against it. When it happens, Israel will go out of its way to say, look, we're trying, we're doing everything we can. Hamas will go out of its way to make sure that as many civilians die, and of course they'll report that more civilians die than actually do, die. We will hear about it in the West. We will hear about more incidents of aid workers dying. We'll hear incidents of people running towards aid and being shot by the IDF, even if they're not, even if they're stampeding and killing each other. And it will be worse for Israel on all counts. In terms of how the world will see Israel, we already know. So hopefully somebody in Israel emerges that says, you know what? Then let's just act. I would say that's the best case scenario. Unfortunately, I'm too pessimistic to think that's an actual possible scenario. And going back to Iron Meerkat's question, it's another reason not to vote for Ben-Gvir. Because again, will he be the one who says, you know what? I'm gonna break up this government right now unless we do what's right. That would be a good move to make.
So last point I would make is for the Palestinian people to change, and basically for this situation to change. Well, one, Israel has to go into Rafah. There's no question about that. And then the occupation has to be done, but it has to be done right. If it's gonna happen in the same way as it was, and that was one problem with the Six-Day War. If the occupation is going to be done in the same way as it was after the Six-Day War, well, nothing will change. Israel will have to get out because of the international pressure. Israel will have to get out of Gaza again, will allow elections again, and the people themselves, the Palestinian people in Gaza, because nothing changed for them, they will elect Hamas or Hamas-like a group again. So if Israel doesn't want this to happen, it will have to occupy and it will have to withstand a lot of pressure because since the Palestinians still support Hamas to a large extent, during the occupation they will most likely attack the IDF troops, and Israel will have to respond and will have to respond harshly. And again, not in the way we'll go in if something happens. As you said, the presence of IDF has to be ever present in Gaza. It has to be seen. They have to be seen that they are occupied. The Palestinian people have to realize that there are consequences for their actions and their ideology. And the only way they can change is if they realize, okay, what we did was wrong. And not because we failed in doing it, so it's fundamentally wrong. And if we hope to ever live in a free country, which at this point they might not even want, but if we ever hope to live in better days, let's say live better, we have to learn from the Israelis how to actually govern.
Yeah, I know we're slightly behind schedule. A few more points, some interesting comments in the chat. I haven't been able to read all of them, but I caught a few interesting ones. Amio says, so if Finland closed its borders with Russia, does this also make Russia an open air prison? Look, I mean, yeah, it's nice to answer these points by the pro-Palestinian side and in this manner, but also remember what they are actually advocating for. Ask any of them if they think Israel has a right to exist. You may find some who very reluctantly say yes. The vast, vast majority want Israel wiped off the map. They want a second Holocaust. They don't always put it in those terms. They sometimes have to skirt around hate speech laws when they talk, but it's very clear, very, very clear where they stand. We've seen people in these protests in London try to, claim that Hamas are terrorists and get attacked physically. So yeah, that's who the other side is. Clara says in the chat, the Western world is committing suicide. Unfortunately, that is very much true in every way. Much like we say about the Palestinians, we often say they have disagreements. Some of them want different types of government for their area. They have one thing they completely agree on, which is exterminating the Jews. Unfortunately, if you look at the political spectrum in Western countries, people have disagreements. What is a man and what is a woman and all that kind of stuff. Open borders, close, but ultimately, yeah, the destruction of the West is the suicide of the West is something that there is a consensus, even if people don't say out loud, that is what they're working for, even if people don't realize that is what they're working for. Unfortunately, that is where we're headed. The Ayn Rand Center UK, we will try very much to prevent that. And one way you can help is by liking our content, commenting on it. If you're not subscribed, of course, subscribing, sharing, and let's try to prevent this before it happens. Ayn Rand Center UK YouTube members, the reality show extra starts a few minutes after this show ends. If you are not a member, you can click the join button. It's very easy to do. And if you're not an Ayn Rand Center UK member through the website, you can do that as well, aynrandcenter.co.uk/membership. Yeah, anything that I'm forgetting, Daniel, before we.
Casa de Linda Est.
Yes, I agree with that. Iron Meerkat does as well, even though he's not commenting, but I know he does. Thank you, everybody, for watching. We will be, as mentioned, on the reality show extra in a couple of minutes, and the daily objective and the reality show return tomorrow. Thanks, Daniel. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.